Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello, Tater, doing good. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Hey, do you have anything good to drink this week?
Well, we had a weekend at a hotel slash brewery, which is an unusual combination, the Doghouse in Columbus.
What is the brand that is that?
Brewdog.
Brewdog, okay.
Yeah, it's a Brewdog brewery there, and they've put a hotel next to it. It's not a big hotel. It's only three floors and probably about 10 rooms to a floor, and it's connected right to the brewery. I mean, like, the view from some of the rooms is looking out at the large barrels where the beer is.
That's cool.
Yeah, so you're right there live in it, and you have all the different beers that they make there that are available to you. So we tried the variety. They have a nice restaurant right there that you can eat at the restaurant there with it. So we did that. We went the next day, we went into over to Easton, which is a different part of Columbus. And I went to one of the movie theaters that I've always heard about but never gotten to go to, where they serve you food and alcoholic beverages.
What was it like? Was it like an Alamo, or was it like a specific thing?
It was AMC.
Okay. Well, I didn't know AMC's had those. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, like, they, you know, brought us our chicken wings to our seat, and we brought beers in, and Mom had a margarita, and so we watched the movie and ate and drank, and then we went to an Irish pub after, and I got my famous Guinness.
Wow. That sounds amazing. You had a lot of good drinking.
I know. Yeah, it was our 44th wedding anniversary, so, you know, we had to do something.
Wow. Congratulations.
Well, thanks. How about you? Good you have
job.
Anything good?
Good job being barren.
Well, thanks. I try.
What did I have anything fun this week? I don't think I did. I don't know. I mean, it's like some weird nerdy stuff in my house, you know, like always doing little fun
artsy
cocktail
things,
experiments.
Huh?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Our last week episode was of course our Bourdain episode, and we mentioned the Negroni, and I wanted a Negroni in response to that, but I did not have everything for a Negroni. So I did a Negroni with, Amaro Nonino instead of Campari, and it made a much softer, lighter Negroni, and I enjoyed that. Just, you know,
well, good.
He's like an old Tom Gin. It was a riff, but it was fun.
Well, that's something.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, you know how I always keep a trivia calendar on my desk.
Yeah.
I read one the other day that made me think of you. It said that on average, 1,600 New Yorkers a year are bitten by other New Yorkers.
So what category do you think I fall most likely into, Dad? The category that is bitten or bites?
is bitten.
Okay, I guess it's a compliment.
I could just see you minding your own business on the subway or something, and somebody just coming up and randomly biting you or something.
I feel like that is I feel like in my 20s, I might have been more of a biter than a bitten, but you're right, probably now. I'm calmer now.
Is that the way it is in New York? Bite or be bitten?
I think, like, that's why, like, everyone is like, oh, people ignore each other in New York, they don't pay attention to each other's like suffering. It's like, no, it's that we've all been there. We've all been the person that's like screaming on the street, and then there's a moment like, you'll be fine, you're gonna get over this. There's an element of that. Like, I've been both. And now I'm like, if you seem in danger, I'll help you. But if you just need to scream on the street corner, that's fine. Do your thing.
Have at it.
Yeah.
I'll join you.
Like, we're not all, like, hardened, cold, disconnected people. Some of us just actually understand the person screaming on the street.
Well, anyway, be careful out there. Anyway, that's what made me think of it. Careful.
Hey, we just reelected our I don't know. I saw a tweet that was like, crime is free in New York again. Somebody was angry at how the way the elections went. They went pro Democrat. I'm like, okay, pro crime, New York City, baby.
He ran on a platform of pro crime, huh?
And we all were like, yeah, I can do some crime. It's fine.
Elect him. He'll let us do what we want. It's like every day is the purge.
For the record, crime rates in New York are actually at a historic low. Just in case you've been scared by Fox News, I don't know what you watch. I'm not here for politics, but just to clarify, it's actually a lot safer here than it has been in many past years. It's just the news is telling you otherwise. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No.
We are here today. A patron wrote in asking if we'd ever done an episode on Jägermeister. We've also had a couple other queries here and there about Jägermeister. And we have mentioned it in the past, but I don't think we've ever devoted a full episode to it. So I thought we would do that. We would talk just is all Jägermeister all day.
Yeah, the Jägermeister bomb.
Yeah. Now it's something we're all familiar with. I think a lot of us, especially in the States, have tried Jägermeister. But I'm curious what people think it is. Like, Dad, I know you've done some prior research. You always do. But, like, what is your concept of what Jägermeister is?
Well, before I had done my research, if you ask me, it's a college frat boy drink that everybody just drinks to get, like, you know, drunk. You just do shots of it and get drunk. That it's high alcohol and, you know, and things like that. Now, that was my impression. And you know, that it was a real shock to find out the actual background of it.
Well, I think that is the common concept, like, thought of Jägermeister, at least here in America. Yeah, it's a frat boy thing. It's also, like, low quality. It's
party
sweet.
Drink. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, which you're correct, and that is wrong. But that's our cultural association with it. But we were
brainwashed, though. That's why we think that.
Well, it was sold in a time where it made sense to sell it that way. But let's get into some history. So of course, first and foremost, for those of you unaware, what is Jägermeister? It is a German herbal digestif. It's a top secret guarded recipe what goes into it, but they have made it known that there are 56 different herbs, fruits, spices, and roots included in that recipe. Some notes which have been parsed out are licorice, anise, poppy, ginger, saffron, citrus, ginger, juniper, and ginseng. And this super secret guarded recipe is ground up. It's precisely weighed, and then it's steeped in grain neutral spirits along with water for up to 3 days. Then it is filtered out. That product is aged in oak for about a year. And then it is sweetened with liquid sugar and caramelized sugar, and a little bit more alcohol is added. And that's where we get the end product that is Jägermeister. So it's about 35% ABV. It is sweet. It is a little viscous. It is herbal and earthy. And I think it's tasty.
Yeah, well, it's got 56 ingredients. So if they'd added one more, it would have been Heinz 57.
Well, this is Jägermeister 56. This is a genetic code. It's not ketchup. Not yet. Well, and so the recipe was it was born in 1935-34, but the path to its creation started a few decades earlier, and that was with Wilhelm Maas, who is the company's founder. Now, Maas moved to Wolfenbüttel, Germany in the 1870s in hopes to just go into business for himself. At the time, Wolfenbüttel was very much a mining town, and miners would use vinegar to rapidly cool heated rocks chipped off during mining at the time. So this meant that vinegar was a good business to be in this area. So he got into the vinegar business. Yeah, the demand for vinegar. I was trying to figure out exactly this mining process, and I mean, there is, like, there's like a very ancient, like Middle Ages mining process of like heating rocks to the point that they would like crack if they're rapidly cooled, and then you would use vinegar or water to do this. I don't know if this is exactly that. Maybe this is what this was doing. There's not a lot of evidence in vinegar in the mining process, but that's the story behind why he went into vinegar. So we'll go with it.
I'd never heard of vinegar being involved in mining, so I was surprised to read that too.
Yeah. So he went into the vinegar business. He opened not just a vinegar production facility, but he also had a bit of a background in fine wines. So he got into like selling of fine wines, and he had some success. But he was hindered by illness in like 1910, and his son Kurt Mast took over the business in 1918, and he radically redirected the course of the company. So he decided to cease the production of vinegar and use all that distillation, all that equipment, to focus instead on creating a unique liqueur using the bevy of surrounding agriculture in the area, because that's kind of the other prominent industry in this area. They had mining and they also had agriculture. So he spent over a decade perfecting his recipe. So, you know, he started in 1918. It wasn't until 1935 that Jägermeister was introduced to the market as his unique German herbal liqueur digestif.
Yeah, and what if I read it right, he kind of, as he phased out the vinegar, he increased the wine production they were doing because he didn't have his Jägermeister developed yet. So he increased the wine to support them while they were making this transfer until he was finally satisfied with the recipe that he came up with.
Yeah. Now, I think of this, because we're talking 1935, we're talking Germany. I think we have coincided with some shitty history, is what I'll call it.
So instead of drunken history, we got shitty history.
And this is shitty history. And this is just true. So the name Jägermeister, let's talk about it. You know, at this point in history, 1934, 1935, Germany, the Nazi Party was in power. And I think it's important in alcohol history to separate, like, the kind of, we talk a lot about the sort of silly lies, the silly stories that come up, like people claiming things that, why did you claim that? That was absolutely already made. That are just sort of part of the story, like whatever. And then like the things that are meant to obscure the truth because it's an uncomfortable truth. And this is the case with Jägermeister, I think. Because the name Jägermeister, if you look at the Jägermeister webpage or even the wiki article, it will tell you the following. The name Jägermeister translates to Master Hunter. It comes from Kurt's own background as a hunter, as well as being a title of a high-ranking official in charge of local gamekeeping. So Jägermeister was just a term for the Master Hunter at the time. And Kurt Mass was a hunter. He was doing this in homage to hunters. But it's important to note that another common nickname for Jäger at the time was Goringschnaps, and this referenced a prominent member of the Nazi Party. That was the appointed Jägermeister of the Nazi Party, Hermann Göring. So that term, around 1934, had been reappropriated to refer to a specific member appointment of the Nazi Party.
Mm-hmm.
And now you could argue, did he name his liqueur after this official? Or was he just so removed from politics that he did not realize the implications? I mean, I guess we could argue that. But it was embraced by the Nazi Party, and it was a popular drink on the front lines of World War II, enjoyed by the Axis powers. So,
and was given the nickname. It was given the nickname Göring Schnaps.
Yeah. So, you know, what bothers me isn't the fact that, I mean, the fact that that is the history. I mean, history is just like that. It doesn't have a morality to it. It's just facts. It's that they kind of obscure this and they tell this nice story about like, oh, he was a hunter. He loved hunting so much. Like, it might have been named at the time in honor of a prominent Nazi official. You know,
they might have been trying to curry favor so that they didn't come and shut him down or something, too.
Well, who knows? But that is there. And, you know, react to that how you will. We're just here to tell you the facts. You would think, like, from a pure PR perspective, I get it. You don't want to lose your brand recognition. but is it worth association with Nazis? And to that I say, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a prominent rum brand right now still for sale in America called Plantation Rum that doesn't change its name from Plantation Rum, despite the horrible association that you're invoking with that. So,
yeah, that's true.
But hey, I mean, you know, if you don't want to drink Jägermeister anymore because of the association, you know, you also have to take Fanta out of rotation because Fanta is also a secret Nazi creation, apparently.
I was not aware of that.
Well, and not like Nazis specifically, but because of trade embargoes on Germany in the World War One, World War Two period, they created Fanta to be a locally available soda because they couldn't import from the U.S. So,
no, you don't deserve Orange Crush or Knee High, so you got to drink Fanta. It's like RC Double Cola.
Look, the thing is, like, I don't think like I think it's like, you know, which we're about to roll into, the person that made Jägermeister really popular in America was actually, it's actually a Jewish man. Jägermeister is, by and large, it's not owned by the same people. It has been removed several times as a brand. However you feel about it, you're allowed to feel about it. I just prefer to be truthful about the history and just own up to it than try to weave a story about, oh no, it's just because this man was a hunter. He didn't know. Oh, what a mistake. Like, maybe he did do it in honor of Nazis. But as an American, Germany's a lot better at counteracting Nazi offenses these days than we are. So I can't say shit.
Yeah. Well, now the symbol and everything that they use comes directly from the hunt, you know, that they use. So the buck with the cross in between his antlers, that was a vision of their, was it Saint Hubertus?
Yes, that was he was a hunter who started like the 8th century Catholic saint, and his story is he was hunting a stag on Good Friday, and he had a vision that in his vision the stag turned, looked at him dead on, and he had a glowing cross between his antlers, and the stag told him to seek out the church and mend his ways or he would burn in hell. So he did that. He became the patron saint of hunters, and he inspired the imagery on the Jägermeister label. This is also sort of reference. Also, if you notice, there's a poem around the outside of the label.
Right.
It's in German, but it translates to, "This is the hunter's honor shield, which he protects and looks after his game, huntsman's hunt, as it should be, the creator in the creature's honor."
And that's basically the literal translation. They said a looser one that makes it rhyme is, "This is a hunter's badge of glory that he protect and tend his quarry. Hunt with honor as is due, and through the beast to God is true." That one sounds more like a poem.
That sounds better. That sounds better. Well, and also the bottle design has kind of a funny backstory. Basically, Kurt just wanted, he wanted the most rugged bottle, like the most sturdy bottle possible. So he just ordered one of all of the bottling options from the bottling plant he was using, and he just got it on like at a high height in his house and dropped the bottles onto his oak wood floor to see what would shatter, like what was least likely to shatter. And this heavy green glass bottle was the one that didn't shatter of all the ones he tried, so that's why the bottle is what it is. Just, it didn't break.
Yeah, I guess he figured if you drank that much of this, you were going to probably be falling down and dropping the bottle, so he wanted something that wouldn't break.
Yeah.
Or maybe he thought it should be rugged like a hunter or something. I don't know. You're going to take it out on the hunt with you. I don't know.
You're going to have it in the woods while you're hunting the stag. Got to be sturdy. I don't know.
That was the old concept of a stag party, I guess. I don't know.
You had a bottle of Jägermeister.
Yeah.
That's just called a frat party. Well, hey, speaking of frat parties, so. So Jägermeister continued on as a popular sort of older demographic digestif in Germany, and it was, like, exported to surrounding areas, not in, like, huge numbers, until pretty fairly recently. the things really started to change both domestically and internationally in the 70s. So one big important thing that happened was it was picked up as a brand sponsor for like German football teams and motor racing that started like in 72. So it became associated with a lot of sporting events. And then on the, for us, the domestic front in 73, the American businessman, which I mentioned slightly before, Frank Sidney, secured the importing rights. Frank Sidney was a very, like he ended up being a billionaire. He, you know, launched his own vodka brand. He imported Jägermeister. He was a very innovative businessman, and he chose to center the marketing for Jägermeister not on the older crowd that it had overseas, but rather on the college crowds. Like, he launched his campaigns in like Louisiana to get this to become a popular thing. You have this refined 56 ingredient digestif, and he put it in Jello shots.
Yeah. In Germany, you had blue collar workers, middle class people sitting around sipping it by the fireplace, and we bring it to America and advertise it as a college party drink. And that's what we think of it. And that's why we were brainwashed by this advertising, thinking that's what it is, that it's a cheap, you know, like a peach schnapps or something like that. You know, we think that that's what it is to drink. And it was not developed with that in mind and not consumed in that manner in Germany.
No. And it took on like this sort of party vibe. Like, you know, there was a Baton Rouge newspaper that told its reader that Jägermeister was instant Valium. And the story got very popular, was passed around, like, you know, viral in a pre-internet age, that like sales went from 10 cases a month to 1,000. And that, you know, this inspired this sort of association with Jägermeister as just this like ultimate party beverage, you know. Like, open your mouth, take a shot of Jaeger, from like Jaegerettes, which were like, you know, the women that would go around in collegiate town bars and sell shots of Jaeger.
Well, the Ice Luge was made for that, wasn't it?
Yeah, that same businessman, he invented it in the this was in the 90s, but yeah, the cooling system, like a little Jaeger chapel that shoots out cold shots of Jaeger, which you still see in bars today. That was invented by him. It is kind of wild, because like Amaris are meant to be had at room temperature. You're supposed to taste all of the flavors in it. It's only a low quality one that you would taste chilled. So it is kind of funny that that's the way that they market it. It's like, drink it ice cold. Like, well.
Well, but that's funny that it's really genius when you can latch on to something like that and make people, I mean, because that had to increase sales, because especially at that age, college kids, oh, they're doing it over there. Well, we want to do it too. So you run out and buy bottles of it, you know, so it had to have caught on in popularity and really grown fast.
Well, and they definitely played off the imagery of the label, this sort of association, especially with frat culture, this sort of like saintly huntsman, this like masculine kind of image of it helped it sell. Mm-hmm. But I mean, yeah, it worked. It became that, to the point that Jägermeister is actually, and I'm just saying this as a bartender, it's a perfectly serviceable mixer in cocktails. It's good. You know, you can plug it in place of a lot of popular mixers, things like Chinar or even Fernet. It plays in a similar space, and you can make fun mods on drinks with that. You know, it works great in Old Fashioned. It works great in a Manhattan. It doesn't play in cocktails any differently than a lot of very traditional ingredients. But because of its association with the frat house, it's hard to break that. On a menu, if somebody looks at your menu and they see Jägermeister as an ingredient, they're going to go, no, where am I at? Wow. I need to leave this bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. And that's just simply the connection to the advertising. It's just like, you know, if you think about having a beer at the beach, what's the first beer you think of?
Corona.
Yeah. And why? There's nothing beachy about it. It's because of their advertising. Their advertising was all aimed at that. So that's what you think of. And most of the time, when they blind test beers, Corona is one of the ones that finishes at the bottom. yet it's one of the most highly ordered in the, if you're at the beach.
Well, we've talked about that. I think we've talked about this in the past, but Corona, the biggest problem with Corona is it's in a clear bottle, and that causes your beer to degrade rapidly. And that's
rapidly,
why
yeah.
Corona La Familia is the same beer. It's just in a brown bottle, but it's Corona good. That's it.
Right.
Look for that. Look for that.
But I think that's just genius when you can do that.
Well, and that's I always recount this story because I worked I worked at this bar years ago that had a we were hosting the holiday party for Jägermeister reps in New York City, and so we had an all we had a massive back bar. Like we had like 300 bottles of alcohol displayed on our back bar on like 20 feet high in the ceiling. We had to take it all down and put all Jägermeister up.
Oh,
and
man.
Our whole menu was Jägermeister cocktails, and they were good. That was my first time actually making Jägermeister cocktails, like actively. And they were all very nice drinks. We did a Jägermeister Old Fashioned. We did a Jägermeister Manhattan. There was a Jägermeister Sour kind of vibe. There was a Punch. They were all good. And the brand rep that had organized the party was kind of checking in with me because I was the one running the bar. And I was like, you know, I thought I was being like complimentary. I was like, yeah, I was really, I'll be honest. Like, I did not, all of these cocktails are great. And like, I just didn't, I don't think I have it in my mind that like Jägermeister is such a good cocktail ingredient. And his response was like, well, I mean, we don't need that. We don't need your people to like our stuff. Like, we don't need bartenders. We do fine with what we got. Like, it's cool that you think that. But it was kind of like, that's fine. We have the frat crew. We have the bar crew. We don't need you bartenders to like us. But it's cool that you think that. And I was like, yeah, fair, fair. That's probably fair. You don't need us.
Well, and if you're appealing to that crowd, I wouldn't be surprised if Frank was the one that suggested that there's deer's blood or stag blood or whatever in it as making it that much cooler, because all the guys didn't want to try it. Oh, he's got deer's blood in it. But that's just a rumor. That is one of the 56 ingredients.
They've had to come out and very strongly make it clear that they are vegan. So that is true. I do that, you know, however you feel about the roots of Jägermeister, I will emphasize that Frank Sidney was a Jewish man. So, and he became a billionaire by his purchasing and propagation of Jägermeister. So maybe that's just.
Yes. But it is a unique beverage.
It is, and it's very mixable in cocktails. Again, you know, any place you plug in like a darker Amaro, you can try it out. Any place you use Fernet, Chinar, Montenegro, anything like that, you can sub it in. It's good. It's good chilled, but it's also good at room temperature. And they also have some other fun products on the market these days. They've got a Jägermeister cold brew coffee.
So I've seen that before.
Yeah, cold brew coffee or coffee brewed into Jägermeister. They have Jägermeister Manifest, which is a slightly higher ABV, and it just says it's more premium than the a super premium herbal liqueur. Whatever that
super
means.
Premium. Super it's premium. It's like the gas, huh?
Yeah.
I want super premium gas.
So that's out there. It's like three times the cost of traditional Jägermeister. I've read a few reviews. Maybe it's worth it. But Jägermeister's out there. It's fine. You know.
Well, I thought it was interesting what you went through, what you were telling me before we started. And you were saying that, you know, a lot of people, they have the idea that it's real strong and, you know, like, you know, almost like grain alcohol or something like that, because you hear the stories about the hangovers and all that. But if you, it's because of the sugar. If you drink a bunch of shots of it, if you drink 12 shots of this, you're going to get a hangover. It's not because of the extreme amount of alcohol or anything. It's because of all the sugar that's in there. So that's why it's better as a mixer than it is. I mean, unless you're just going to sip something, you know, more maturely than a frat guy, then it will, you know, it could come back to bite you the next morning.
Yes. Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think, you know, any of us should be doing like lots and lots of shots as a way of drinking, just as a statement. But yes, the reason that Jägermeister makes you sicker than most isn't because it's gnarlier or it's gross or it's poorly made. It's just because it has more sugar content, and it's just part of what leads to a bad hangover. And yeah, like, you know, that is, it is, it, it is an element that makes it much more mixable, and it's also an element that makes it a much worse hangover. It's not any different than if you did 12 shots of Fernet or 12 shots of Chenard or 12 shots of Montenegro.
But they were never marketed to do 12 shots of Jägermeister.
No, no, it is weird. I mean, I think part of the magic of it hitting the way it did is that there was just nothing else in the marketplace that tasted like it or looked like it. So it felt like a fully unique product, even though if you were in Europe at the same time, you said, yeah, that's an Amari. Like, there's a, that's a popular thing. Like,
bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah. But here in America, we didn't have anything like that. Anything like that on the market. Mm-hmm. So it just seemed like its own singular thing, you know? Mm-hmm. We had base spirits that were very strong,
right,
or artificial things that were very highly sweetened. Jägermeister was the first thing that kind of was a complex beverage that was also sweet. The American palate has always been sweeter, like since the World Wars. Like, it's always been sweeter. So, you know, it fit. Genuinely genius marketing.
Yeah, from my lack of knowledge of how these things work, I would have put Jägermeister there with like grain alcohol and I don't know, there was something else I was thinking of. That's,
you say peach
one of the
schnapps
ones,
or something?
Yeah, peach schnapps, you know, and some things like that. That, oh, Mad Dog 2020, that used to be
okay,
a popular
well
one.
Yeah, and, that's like
that's where I would have placed it, not having known its background.
Well, and I would say like again, like peach schnapps also just managed to make a wave at a time where other drinks were not, were in a very disrespected period of drinking, so that gets a bad association too, whereas peach schnapps can actually be good. I feel like that is more the same. Like, anything that became popular in the 70s and 80s has the stink now of being popular in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I think that's true.
We abused all those alcohols in that time period. Not abused them drinking them, abused them by how we used them.
Well, it doesn't mean they were bad. They were never bad. They're still part of the same drinking lexicon. It's just you're associated with a period of time where we were very otherwise ignorant about how to drink.
So cocktails.
Jägermeister's no different. Mm-hmm. However, its roots, you know, and I think, again, like, that's probably where the name comes from, but also it has changed hands many times. Do with that information what you will, but it's better you know it than we hide it. We're not going to obscure it here. And nowadays it's not just for the frat house. It's a great mixer if you want to use it.
And no Nazis benefit from the drinking of it.
That's important. I mean, again, like, I will state, like, here in America, we have a bigger problem with Nazis these days than actual Germany. And this is a German-owned company now.
That's a sad statement.
Well, I don't know. Hey, like, let's be real. Like, after the war, Germany made a lot of laws that they still follow, that, like, Nazis are bad and we will always make sure Nazis are bad. And America went, yeah, Nazis are bad. And now we're like,
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna sit on a high horse. Like, that's where we're at. Jägermeister supports Germans, which abstractly are better at suppressing Nazism than Americans. So I guess they're doing better than us.
There that's right. There you go.
Is Jägermeister gonna hire me for an ad campaign? No, but.
Well, we don't need their ad money.
Well, if you enjoy Jägermeister, however you choose to enjoy it, that is totally fine. If you want to try it in a cocktail, though, it's absolutely mixable. So absolutely try it. We'll make a companion video to this, and I will show you a few of my favorite uses for it. But
Well, I would also say, if that's something you kind of scratched off your list because you think it's just a wild frat party drink, maybe give it a try, because you may miss out on something that you would enjoy.
Yeah. No, it's still, if you like Amaris, you would like Jaeger. I mean, that's, if you like Fernet, you'll like Jaeger. If you like Chenard, you'll like Jaeger. They're very similar. It just has a different association. That's it.
I'm getting me a bottle of it. I gotta do some experiments with it.
All right. Well, we'll make some experiments with it. And thank you to our Patreon member that suggested the episode. I hope this was fun for you. I hope this was informative. Thank you to Dad. Thank you for being here.
Well, Tay, thanks for having me. Once again, I learned something new I never knew before.
Yep. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for supporting us. We are Neat Boozecast on Twitter and Instagram. We are also neatboozecast@gmail.com. And if you want to join our Patreon, you can check us out over there. We have all sorts of fun rewards, stickers, and coasters. And if you ask questions, we will give you whole episodes about your questions, just like we did today. And if you want to talk about your favorite thing to do with Beacon Maestro, you can do that
at Meet the Boozecast group page on Facebook.
We'll do that. All right. Thanks again. I've been Peter Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Meet. And they had that picture in Wikipedia of all the Jaeger bombs lined up there. And I just always thought that was just something you say. I didn't realize that it was a drink within a drink. No, I mean, I may have said it because I didn't realize what it actually was. I didn't realize that you drop a shot of it down in another drink. I have to try that in my experimentation. Jaeger bomb. Yeah, Red. Yeah. I used to like Red Bull and vodka.
Yeah, I know. I remember the New Year's you discovered Red Bull and vodka.
I was up all night.
Are you sitting in that armchair just with your legs vibrating like, this is great.
Until my heart exploded.
Do that again.